الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على نبينا محمد وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد. So pretty much the whole reason behind that experience last Monday was to, you know, sometimes if you have a word in mind, like the word general, or like the person online was, you know, universal might be better. But la'am, if you understand a word a certain way, you sometimes need some kind of jolt to, you know, make sure that you understand that, okay, in this case, this is not what it means. And so therefore, when you approach usul text, and fiqh text, and they use the word al-am, they are using it according to the specific terminology and not maybe some kind of understanding of the word general that you might have otherwise. Okay. So that was the whole reason to go through all that you will remember that. So after that, now what is the, who can give me a good definition for al-am? What does al-am mean? After all that,
you want like the subset? It has to include all the whole
subset. I'm looking to see, you know, that you understand it. So as they always say, you know, in your own words, that kind of stuff. Whatever, however you'd like to explain it, feel free.
That includes a particular subset and everything within that set. Then it's. You got the big circle, all the dots.
Okay.
If it includes all the dots in that circle.
All right. See that? Al-Malik, how about you?
Something that point to a set that include all the all things in the set, and not to be limited in the number. Apply to all.
Okay. Sister, would you like to? Okay. All right. So I think using set theory, either using set theories or just drawing things on the board. Mm-hmm. So if you have a text, so if you have some kind of set. And that set has members to it. Like, for example, the Muslims. Okay, so you have, within that set, you have individual Muslims. So a text which is general, I guess we'll call it general. The wording of that text, implies at once, the wording of that text implies everybody in that set. Without exception, and without like numbering them, naming them, just the word itself, just the word or the phrase or the term itself is going to refer to all of them together as a whole. Right? So that is al-am. So anything which is not general or universal, is going to be specific. Sometimes specific, sometimes particular. And that is al-khas. So al-khas, let's say like we have a set of students in the classroom. If we have students in the classroom, okay, and I tell you, for example, ask Zaid to come to my office. Ask Zaid to come to my office. So when you identify the one person, Zaid, that's going to be khas, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. When you identify one out of everybody, that's going to be khas. Okay. But also, if you identify a group within, okay, if you identify a group within the set, this is also khas. If I tell you, go and ask five students to come into my office. Five students,
even though I'm setting a number, well, actually, by the fact that I'm setting a number, that makes it clear that it is not am, it's khas. Or also, could be the case. Could be the case that there is a set, and you're free to choose anyone from the set. Okay. Bring me, ask a student to come in. Ask a student to come in. So you can go to that. You can go to that group and choose. You can choose any one of those, and you'll be fulfilling my request, right? So this is also khas. All of these are khas. Anything which is not am is going to be khas. Now this last one that I described is also known as al-mutlaq. Al-mutlaq, where you have the freedom to choose from a set. So the set is defined, but you have the freedom to choose anyone from that set. So al-mutlaq means unconstrained or unrestricted. So you have a set, a number of people, some of them are black and some of them are red. And I tell you, you know, like these are all students, for example. And I tell you, bring me a student, or if these are all books, bring me a book. You are free to choose any book that you want. So this is mutlaq. I could also say, bring me two books. You could choose any two of those. This is also mutlaq. Mutlaq, therefore, is a subset of khas. Now, some people get mutlaq confused with al-am, because they think, okay, you're free. It's a general statement. You're free to choose whatever. That's, you know, one way that people think of general. No. General means it applies to all of them. Mutlaq means you have some freedom of choice. Okay. Now, why I put this as black and red, suppose, for example, this is a set of slaves, for example. This is a set of slaves. And I tell you that if you commit a certain sin, then the expiation is you have to free a slave. You have to free a slave. Is that khas or am?
Khas.
It's khas, right? You can free any slave. You don't have to free all the slaves, right? You're not Abraham Lincoln. You don't have to free all the slaves. You just free a slave. You can go and choose any slave that you want. Right? So this is khas. This is definitely khas. This is also mutlaq. Now suppose these are all the slaves. The black are non-Muslim slaves, and the red are believing slaves. So suppose I tell you, you have to free, if you do a certain action, you have to free a believing slave. You have to free a believing slave. Is it still khas?
Yes.
Is it still mutlaq?
No, no.
Okay. It has been restricted a little bit, and so therefore it has another name. It is called al-muqayyad. Al-muqayyad. Al-muqayyad is a unrestricted thing which has been restricted a little bit. Somehow restricted.
So is that khas muqayyad?
Pardon me?
If you say you have to free a believing slave,
That will be muqayyad, which is a kind of khas. It's a kind of khas. All of these, everything under here, it's khas. And so what we want to discuss, we want to understand the concept of al-am well, and then we can move on from that to then discuss al-khas. And then when we discuss al-khas, we're going to have al-mutlaq and al-muqayyad underneath the khas, and also two other things later. Okay, but the differences between them here, these are clear. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first step is understanding the concept. Now, the scholars, actually I had a handout, but I decided not to pass it out. The scholars, it was more for fun than, you know, the scholars, of course, have to define am, right? I mean, they're not going to just show you something like this and say, okay, you understand am now. They tried to define it, and over the years, they tweak much of what you find in books on Usul al-Fiqh. Is someone takes a previous author's definition and says that that's not good enough, and he has to change. Because for definition to be proper, there's three conditions you have to meet. It has to be jama', it has to include everything that it's supposed to include. It has to be mana', has to exclude everything that doesn't fit under the definition. And then I forget the word for this one in Arabic, but in English we call it Occam's razor, which means you have to remove everything which is unnecessary. So what you get a lot in the books of Usul al-Fiqh is, for example, al-Razi wrote a book on Usul al-Fiqh, and then the scholar who comes after al-Razi will take al-Razi's definition and say, well, you know, it's good, but it's not jama', it's not mana', it needs to be tweaked. By the time, by the way, you get to contemporary scholars feel the need to explain everything for us. So the definitions now are like three or four times the length of the earliest definitions. Now,
online question. Muqayyad is still khas, right?
Yes, Muqayyad is definitely still khas. Okay, now the place of Am, the concept of Am texts. Am texts is obviously extremely important. The Quran, one of the things that we know about the Quran, for example, is that the Quran oftentimes doesn't give us detailed laws, right? It actually states things in general, and it leaves, for example, in some cases, it leaves room for the Sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ to explain things. And so what you find is that many of the texts of the Quran are stated in a general fashion. And so there's a number of very important questions that come up with them with respect to these Am statements. One of them is how definitive is the Am statement, is the Am text, you know, how definitively does it apply to the individual members of the sect? And if you make a general statement, does it apply to each individual member in a definitive sense or more in a conjectural sense? You know, what they call qat'i as opposed to dhanni. That's going to be a very important question to answer. Because there's another very important truth about general statements. Lots of general statements have been particularized. Lots of general statements have been particularized. To the point that there's a famous expression that says, مَا مِنْ عَامٍ إِلَّا وَقَدْ خُصَصْ. There's no general statement except that it has been particularized. Ibn Taymiyyah was very unhappy with that statement. I have a long passage here, about five pages. He wrote a long passage, you know, condemning that statement. He finally concluded that, look, the one who said that statement was either ignorant or he's not very good at expressing himself. Mm-hmm. And he could not have meant actually. But it became a very common slogan that you find in the books of Usul al-Fiqh. The reality is that many of the general statements, a large number of general statements, have been particularized in one way or another. And so a very important question is, and the process of particularization is known as takhsis. Takhsis. And so a very important question is, so if we have a verse in the Quran, for example, and it is a general text, what are we going to allow to particularize this text? Are we going to be very strict and say, okay, in order for this general verse in the Quran to be particularized, the particularizing text or agent has to be, for example, definitive. Mm-hmm. Or, okay, the particularizing agent doesn't have to be definitive. Just basically whatever sounds good, whatever looks good, we'll accept it. So what are we going to accept to particularize the general? This is a very big topic. In fact, it's such a big topic, we're not going to do that this quarter. That's next quarter. But this is one of the most important things, because most texts, or not most, but many, many texts have been particularized. So what can particularize a general term is one of the questions that we want to need to ask. And then when we think of when we think of texts also, we see, for example, that sometimes some texts might be revealed for very specific reasons. They might be stated in a general fashion, but they're revealed in for specific reasons. Can we take those based on the text, based on the wording, and generalize them or not? And there's also another thing in speech that we have to be aware of, and that is that sometimes people use a general word, but they don't mean the generality of it. Sometimes even you can use a general word and you mean something actually very specific. How do we treat those texts? How do we understand those that text and that that reality? Any question? Go ahead.
Maybe you're already planning to do this, but before we start answering these questions, can we get an example of an ayah or a phrase from the Quran that is general?
Oh yeah. These questions aren't going to be answered for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. And yeah, we'll start off with some examples, and then we will get into how do we know these are general. What are the identifying factors that tells us this text is general? Because we don't want to just understand the concept; we also want to be able to recognize what is general. And unfortunately, as I said, of course, recognizing what is general, you're dealing with texts which are in Arabic. When you translate it into English, sometimes that aspect that makes it general is lost in the translation, because the way you translate is based on how we speak in English, not and how the literal was in Arabic. So you have to sometimes know the Arabic a little bit to say, okay, there. But I think most of you would be, as I said, it's not complex Arabic, but it's just something that I think you can